Good Sunday morning and welcome to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. I'm your host, Larry Vetter. And joining me in conversation this morning is Genevieve Croker. Genevieve, you are the executive director of Rebuilding Together Kent County, which is something that I did not know was separate from something called Kent Attainable Housing. And I just learned that very recently. I just kind of assumed that building was building and it was all kind of lumped together. But you're an entirely separate species, right?
Well, we're an entirely separate organization. Both of us are working in the housing sphere, so maybe not a separate species, but two different lanes on the housing highway.
And what is your lane as opposed to what Kent County Kent Attainable Housing does?
Well, first, thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit more about Rebuilding Together Kent County's work. Our mission is repairing homes, revitalizing communities, rebuilding lives. And we are an independent 501c3, but we are part of a larger national network. So there are Rebuilding Together affiliates in about 39 states, something like 130 affiliates. There are 7 or 8 just here in Maryland. So we all share the same mission, but we do our work in different ways depending on our budget size and the communities where we're working. So here in Kent County, we do free critical home repairs and safety modifications for income-eligible homeowners that reside here in Kent County. Kent Attainable Housing, they are working to get people that are currently renting into homeownership.
Okay.
So they do the financial classes, some mortgage subsidies, new home construction. So we try to support each other in any way that we can, but we're really keeping people in the homes that they already own, trying to give them independence. You know, we have an aging population. So if people can stay in their homes with a few modifications, that's better for the whole community. So we don't lose that resource.
All right. So I'd like to talk a little bit about the structure of your organization. I know you're the executive director.
Mm-hmm.
Who else helps you?
Well, it's funny you should bring that up because we're currently hiring a full-time program coordinator. So that's the individual who takes in the applications from our neighbors that need services, helps them get their income verification documents in, and once they're approved, if we're able to work on their repairs with our budgetary constraints, then they work closely with the homeowners and either the contractors or the volunteers who are actually going to complete the repairs. So they're a critical piece of this puzzle. It was formerly a part-time job, but it's been a full-time job. We worked on 35 different properties last year and did over 90 repairs. So we are real busy, and right now it's myself, executive director. We have a part-time administrative assistant who's also a senior at Washington College. And then we have our board of directors who are our Uber volunteers who are just critical to the function of the organization.
So, all right, so you have a couple of people that are actually employed by the organization.
Yes.
And then you have your group of volunteers that come along with
you,
too. Now, when you say you're employed by it, are you employed locally or are you employed as part of that nationwide group you were talking about?
So, again, it's a great question. Each of the affiliates are independent 501c3s. So we do our own fundraising. We have our own boards of directors and policies, and we fundraise here locally. So, of course, we get assistance from the national office when they're able to partner with corporations or with government entities at that larger level, then they're able to offer sub-grants to those of us that fit the criteria for those programs. But I'm paid from the money that I raise here locally. And we have so many generous donors that support this effort. And businesses, community groups, Lions, the Rock Hall American Legion. So it's just several churches support us financially. It takes a village.
Yeah, it really seems to do. Yeah, it's continuously amazing to me the amount of different charitable organizations that are necessary in Kent County to keep things going. And I've met so many different people and so many different diverse charitable organizations.
We have the most, from what I understand, we have the most registered nonprofits per capita in the state.
That's
despite being the smallest population. Yeah. So,
but it's amazing to me how many different dedicated people I have met to these organizations.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the executive directors, you're not going to get rich.
No.
You're not going to get rich doing what you're doing. I realize that. So there's got to be a big heart inside your chest somewhere, because I mean, you're doing a lot of things that for a lot of people, and I know you're not making a lot of money. And then you have to get the volunteers to come in there too.
The volunteers are critical.
And I know that's not easy either.
No, I mean, because as you say, there's so many great organizations doing wonderful things to make our community thrive, and you know, just trying to calendar an event and not butt into something else that somebody else has going on, you know, protecting our waterways, bringing public art, it's all a crucial piece of the puzzle. So I feel grateful to live here in a county with so many folks that want to pitch in and do the work.
It is amazing, and it's amazing how you just mentioned how you interface with some of the other charitable organizations here, and how the organizations help each other along the way in here. And it's just it's an amazing web of excitement of people that are willing to help. So I guess on one hand, it's a shame that we have so many people that require assistance.
Yeah.
But then at least we have enough organizations that are out there trying to help. So it would be a lot worse that if you required assistance and there was nobody else around to help you either.
No place to turn. Yeah. Well, we try. There's plenty of need. I mean, I could, with more money and more staff, I could do more houses each year. There are folks living in some shocking situations here in Kent County.
That I have learned, and it continuously amazes me how there are actually people living around here without plumbing or without electricity.
Yep.
I did not expect that when I first moved here. I'm from New York, as many of the listeners know, out on Long Island, and it's an interesting, what we call poverty on Long Island is a little bit different as what we call poverty here. As well as I've often noticed how it's very different what we call poverty in the United States as opposed to what you call poverty in many of these third world countries. That's different too. But there are some people here that are in some pretty tough situations. And it's really great that we do have the organizations like yours that are trying to help out. Now, I know that you have just a couple people that are highly paid executives, but and the vast majority of the people that you have on board are volunteers.
That's correct.
How do you recruit volunteers?
Well, we try to attend the local events where you can table and make sure all the different stakeholders are aware of your programs. I don't know if there's going to be a volunteer fair this year, but for example, the Home Ports Wellness Fair each October, we're always sure to have a place there. We're looking right now at developing a calendar of some of the events outside of Chestertown. We are serving the entire county, and I know that we can do better reaching Galena, Millington. We do a lot of work outside of the townships as well. We spread the word through church groups. We attend the Chester Valley Ministers Association meetings monthly. So we're on the radar at social services and at the health department. Having this opportunity, like this morning, to talk to your listening audience, because I can accept new applications.
Well, at the end of the program, you can announce the website.
Sure.
For everybody.
Yeah.
So if you want to grab a pen and paper for later on in the program, be ready for that.
And I just wanted to say, too, to the point of volunteers, we have different types of volunteer activities. You don't have to be comfortable swinging a hammer or using a power drill, although we'd be happy on the appropriate days to help you learn those skills. If you are more highly skilled, we do have a sort of go team that can handle some smaller repairs with a partner. We wouldn't put you in the home by yourself. And then we also have from time to time administrative tasks that we need help with, or as I was saying, tabling at events, being an ambassador for the organization. And then hopefully a little later in the program, we'll talk about our housing survey that's coming up, and that's going to be a definite need for volunteers. So I'm excited to talk more about that.
Okay, yeah, we'll definitely get into that probably after the break. But when you have a volunteer, do you look for specific skills in the volunteer? I mean, obviously, if somebody has some construction background, that's got to be helpful.
That's great. Yeah. Yes, we love construction background. We will contract out for electrical repairs and plumbing repairs, but if you do have that skill set, you can help us assess what's needed for the repair so we can know if we can take it on. We have on average about $5,000 per home is what it came out to last year, so we can't always take every repair request, and we really have to budget the things that pose a safety risk, or for example, if someone's mobility needs are changing, you know, we want to be sure that they're able to bathe safely and toilet safely. So any kind of skills that you can bring in that area are great, but also, as I said, we need ambassadors, or I can always use help with some of the marketing tasks. I'm kind of a one-woman show when it comes to maintaining the website and the social media pages and the press releases. So if you think you'd like to get involved and you're can bring something to the table, I'm certain that we can find a good fit for you.
So it's good to know. So even if you have two left hands and you can't hold a screwdriver, you can still participate and help.
Yeah, and also, you know, one great way to help is to make lunch on volunteer days. That way we don't have to purchase sandwiches and chips and soda. Those things start to add up. So, or we're even willing to purchase the materials if you're just willing to make the sandwiches or the soup, and that's a help. So I really think... If you're interested, you should give us a call, and we'll see if it's a good fit.
All right. We'll take a short break right now. You're listening to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. We'll be right back.
Prescription medications just got easier. Is your medication not covered by your insurance? Do you need pre-authorization from your doctor? Chester River Pharmacy can help. Their team can coordinate with your doctor's office and insurance to make sure you receive your medication. Plus, we'll deliver your prescriptions free to your home or office. Transferring your prescriptions? We make it easy. Call us at 410-810-3600 or stop by 601 Washington Avenue in Chestertown. Chester River Pharmacy, your neighborhood pharmacy. Online at chesterriverpharmacy.com.
At Compass Regional Hospice, we understand that a serious illness diagnosis affects all aspects of life for both the patient and the caregiver. Our comprehensive team approach to in-home care adds support you need to maintain the highest quality of life.
Welcome back to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. I'm your host, Larry Vedder. My guest this morning is Genevieve Croker, Executive Director of Rebuilding Together Kent County. And Genevieve, we talked a bit about generically what it is that your organization does, and we talked a little bit about some of the volunteers and some of the work that you take on and some of the work that you have to sub out. But I wanted to jump a little bit right now into funding first, and then I want to talk about a couple of the programs that you have coming up, which includes the housing survey, and maybe we can talk a little bit about Tangle Title as well, too.
Great.
But I wanted to start with funding, because you mentioned before that you average out roughly about $5,000 per house, and you told me that you do about 35 houses. So doing some quick math, that adds up to a fair amount of money, $150,000 plus. I know that you also have costs, overhead costs. So you do have an office
We do have an office.
You do have an office. Mm-hmm. You do have a couple of people that are on payroll. So, you know, I would imagine you have a budget somewhere in the neighborhood of 250,
300,000.
Yeah, I would imagine it's somewhere in that neighborhood. And obviously, the more money that you are able to accrue, the more things that you can do for people in the community. So,
that's correct.
How do you get some of your funding?
Well, there are a number of pieces to that funding pie, as with most public charities. So we receive USDA, United States Department of Agriculture grant. This year we received $70,000 from their housing preservation grant funds. So we're grateful for that ongoing support. It's really the backbone of our construction budget. This year we also received $30,000 from the Maryland Affordable Housing Trust, which is a state-funded program. We also received $5,000 from the Kent County Health Department to support the housing survey that you mentioned, as well as another $1,000 for an ad grant, which is really helpful because, as you mentioned, we do have overhead, and that's some of the hardest money to raise. I think folks have a bit of a, I think this is changing in the sector as donors become more sophisticated and they understand that we're really running a business. We're not putting our profits into anyone's pocket like a for-profit business, but we're putting that back into our mission. We're able to do more. The cost of construction materials has gone up, but it's also quite a bit of work to manage the scheduling of the contractors, the volunteers, the neighbors we serve. If we're in a home and we're doing five different repairs, and let's say only two of them are being done by the contractor, that could take 25 phone calls. A lot of the folks we serve don't have email access or aren't comfortable using email if they do. So in many cases, as we do help folks with income constraints, they might not have a cell phone or voicemail might be full, all kinds of things. You know, it's not normally, the folks we encounter are not normally just dealing with a repair need in their home. They have other things going on that are causing stress in their life. So we also have dues to our national office. We also have insurance coverage, obviously, for our volunteers and our staff. So we do get, as I mentioned, a lot of support locally from individuals, from the Midshore Community Foundation, from the Rotary Club of Chestertown. We also received a grant to help with the housing survey. Upper Shore Regional Council is also providing support. So again, I mentioned there's several churches that have been so generous. The Presbyterian Church of Chestertown actually donated our office space for the first 19 years of our organizational history. We turned 20 this year in 2024.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. So we do have our own office space now in Crestview Square, which is just north of the Redners.
Okay.
So folks should feel free to drop by between 8:30 and 4:30 Monday through Friday. We are sometimes out in the community, so it's always good to check in. But you're welcome to stop by and see what we do or pick up an application. Or
now the USDA grant and the Maryland grant, those are not annual guarantees.
No, sir. I apply each year. Fill out quarterly reports and turn in lots of paperwork.
And what they give you this year may not be necessarily be what they give you next year. So each year,
our Maryland grant was reduced this year. Actually, all of the affiliates were. So it's none of it's guaranteed, and that's a big part of my job. It is actually looking for that funding. So I lose sleep over it.
Yeah, I can imagine. And plus, it's got to be nail-biting inducing as well, too, not knowing what you're going to get. If you're hoping
every
that
year.
If you had $70,000 last year and you're hoping that you can increase that this year, there's no guarantee that that's going to happen. In fact, there's no guarantee you're going to get even a penny out of it.
Any funding.
So
yeah.
I imagine that's got to be a pretty rough period. And I'm sure there have been years where you were hoping for a certain amount and you didn't get it and you have to deal with it. There's not a lot of alternative.
Right.
Now, do you get any assistance at all from the national part of your organization?
As I said, sometimes they're able to get grants at a national level, and then some of that comes back down to us. For example, when we talk about the Tangled title, that's actually funded through Wells Fargo, but that was arranged by the national office, and then I applied to be a sub-grantee. We also have a relationship with Lowe's through the national office, so I get hopefully, I get $6,000 of gift cards to use at Lowe's. So when I'm doing volunteer projects, I can use those to buy the materials. And then I'm really stretching, stretching that money as far as I can. I don't know how much I'm getting this year, but I'll hope for six again. And then we're always looking for corporate sponsors as well. April is National Rebuilding Month all over the country each year. So we try to do a kind of push during that time, get more volunteers involved, and look for businesses who'd like to support our mission. I think it's very critical.
Okay. And I know we've talked a little bit about a couple of these programs you have going on, so I'd like to get into those right now.
Sure.
I know you talked about the two things that I'm aware of, the housing survey and the Tangled Title. And you had mentioned that you're hoping to get some volunteers that have, I guess, administrative capabilities for the housing survey?
They don't have to have administrative capabilities for that survey. We will train the volunteers before they go out to administer the survey. So this is something I'm really excited about, and I have been working towards for a long time. The official data around housing in our county is provided by the American Community Survey, which has a lot of utility for some numbers, but it suggests that there are only about 29 physically substandard houses in our county. It lists other kinds
way underestimated.
Well, I worked on 35 last year, so that math don't math. So I thought, we live in a community with this amazing educational institution, Washington College, and I know that the students and faculty are always looking for educational, experiential learning opportunities. And I thought, I don't have the budget to employ a third-party evaluator to do this survey, and wouldn't it be great if I could partner with the college to find a way to get this done? And I've been so grateful. They really rose to the occasion when I brought it to them. I've been working very closely with Dr. Libby Yost in the sociology department to develop this survey. I've gotten so much support from the STAR Center's hosting program in ethics. They're actually helping with some of the funding for my administrative assistant, because he's also really involved in the housing survey. He's a sociology major, and this is a great fit with his educational goals. So, as I mentioned in the past, previously, the Kent County Health Department, the Rotary Club of Chestertown, and Upper Shore Regional Council, in addition to Washington College, have provided funding to launch this survey. So we'll be launching it in the next, I would say, look for it in March. There'll be a billboard up at the People's Bank. You'll find the QR codes around town, but we will also be hoping that volunteers will come forward to go door to door to administer this survey. We really want to get a statistically significant number of responses, so people can self-report online with the QR code, but do be on the keep your eyes peeled for people in orange shirts who will be coming around in pairs and knocking on your door. This information will be kept completely confidential. Your address won't be associated with the data in the public reporting that's coming out. And this is really going to be a tool to, as we were talking about in the break, you know, eventually a good nonprofit should be trying to work itself out of a job. But I don't even have a reasonably accurate target goal to know what it means to improve all of the homes in this community. And so with this survey, we can demonstrate to funders the kind of need that's here and get the resources that we deserve, whether it's from the local level, the state level, the federal level, or foundations and private forms of support. And we'll absolutely be making this data publicly available to other organizations that can use it in their work too.
In just a couple of words then, what is the actual goal? Is it to find out how many houses could potentially be needing help?
Yes, sir.
That's what it primarily is.
I am trying to ascertain the actual condition of the housing stock in this county because the data that's publicly available doesn't seem to be accurate to me.
Okay, so, right, the data says there are 29 houses.
Right.
But reality says that there's got to be a lot more than that, but you don't have a finite number. So that's the stated goal then of this survey, is to be able to say that, all right, I know that there are 145 houses that fall under the potential auspices. Mm-hmm. Now, they don't necessarily need to contact you. Some of them may be able to work out their own interests.
That's correct.
But you'd have potentially that, and I would imagine that's got to assist you in your grant writing.
Yes, it would be very helpful to know that real number. Right now, I'm only able to use the numbers that I have and then my own anecdotal experience, but I would love to have the real, actual, accurate data. And as there are something like 7,600 occupied units in this county, that's going to mean quite an effort to get out there. And we'll need about between 2,500 and 3,400 responses to make good data.
All right. Well, I'm going to continue on the housing survey after the break. But first, I'd like to thank my sponsors, Heron Point, Chester River Pharmacy, Compass Regional Hospice, and Prince Limousine. You're listening to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. We'll be right back.
Getting your prescription medications just got easier. Is your medication not covered by your insurance? Do you need pre-authorization from your doctor? Chester River Pharmacy can help. Their team can coordinate with your doctor's office and insurance to make sure you receive your medication. Plus, we'll deliver your prescriptions free to your home or office. Transferring your prescriptions? We make it easy. Call us at 410-810-3600 or stop by 601 Washington Avenue in Chestertown. Chester River Pharmacy, your neighborhood pharmacy. Online at Chester River Pharmacy.
At Compass Regional Hospice, we understand that a serious illness diagnosis affects all aspects of life for both the patient and the caregiver. Our
aspect of your retirement lifestyle. It's the security you get with Axe Life Care. Having the retirement you always planned for. Take off for new adventures, meet fascinating residents, and find out how much easier, more enjoyable, and more secure life can be. Your long-term care is prearranged and guaranteed. Your nest egg is protected. Discover retirement living at Heron Point. Call us to learn more, 877-380-1360, or visit axeheronpoint.org.
Mostly sunny for today, a bit of a breeze, temperature near 45. Mostly clear tonight, 45, sunshine tomorrow, high 45, and sunshine 45, 50 Tuesday. We'll keep the sunshine Wednesday, 50 to 55. From the Maryland Weather Center, this is meteorologist Bill Jackman.
Generation on 106.9 WCTR. I'm your host, Larry Vetter. My guest this morning is Genevieve Croker, Executive Director of Rebuilding Together Kent County. Genevieve, we've talked just before the break about the housing survey, and you talked about a little bit about the stated goal, and you had mentioned to me that there are about 7,500 housing units overall, which is a lot for a small group like yours to try and cover.
Right.
I mean, 7,500 housing units is pretty small in the grand scheme of things in the United States. But but when you have a small group of two or three people that are trying to cover all of them, it's a big deal. So I get it. So you do need volunteers. And I guess it would be very helpful if people would be able to be aggressive and look for ways of getting a hold of your survey.
That'd be
and
great.
Doing it in advance. That would be a huge, huge help rather than have to send out people to all over the place, because I know how the world is today. When you bang on doors, 90% of the people are home, but they still won't answer the door anyway.
Right.
Because nobody trusts anybody that comes to a door anymore.
Sure, they think we're selling something. We're not selling anything. We're not selling your data. You can self-report, as I mentioned, online. So, excuse me, we will plan to have community meetings in each of the municipalities as well. So people can come ask questions. We'll have iPads there so they can complete the survey if they want to. We hope to make it as accessible as possible. We also are getting it translated into Spanish by one of the professors at the college.
Oh, that's great. Then, just quickly, I don't want to go over the entire survey and all the questions. But what kind of questions are you going to ask?
It'll only take about 10 minutes, hopefully, to complete. And we will ask some basic demographic questions about income range and how many folks are living in the house. We ask a couple of questions about if you're happy with your living situation at the end, because we're also trying to gather a little information about what people might be looking for that they don't have. But the bulk of the survey is actually mirrors our 25-point questionnaire that we that the national office developed with HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and the National Council on Healthy Housing. I think I might be getting that wrong. If so, I apologize. But it's based on the 8 principles of healthy housing. And so it touches on, is your roof leaking? Do you have a safe way to get in and out of your house? Do you have working smoke detectors? Are your house numbers visible from the street, so in the event emergency services has to come, they can find you? Are there tripping hazards? Do you need, as I mentioned earlier, help toileting? Things like that. So, you know, does your range work? Does your fridge work? Does your dishwasher work? So we're really looking at the whole house. And then, as I said, with the funds we have available, trying to hit those most critical things that are affecting the health. Because we really believe that your house, the health of your house, is foundational to the health of yourself and your family. If you have things going on that are affecting your physical health in the home, they can also affect your mental health, your stress level, and that in turn can affect your schoolwork, your work. Yeah, there's plenty of research that suggests that it's very, very important.
All right, so it's important for everyone to realize that this is not an invasive survey. It's quick survey, and if you don't really fit into the category, it's probably something that's just going to be filed away and forgotten. You know, and if you do fit into the category where you could potentially require some help, that'll probably stay in some sort of semi-active category and give you an idea that if somebody calls from a particular address, you can quickly assess, oh yeah, this is an address that does need help.
Well, we won't keep the data associated with the address for privacy reasons. Washington College will have control of all that data, so we couldn't target you in any way or come back to your house in any way, but we will also be offering a one-page summary of services that are available here, so if you need to reach out to us, you know exactly how to do so. But we want everyone to respond, whether you need home repairs, whether you qualify for our services. We'd like to get a real accurate picture of what's going on here, so we know what resources we need to bring to make the community thrive.
Okay, so if anybody realizes that they really don't ever need your services, it still is helpful if they do respond.
It's so helpful. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, so that's an important aspect. All right, the other program that you had mentioned that's coming down the pipe is the Tangled Title Program. And what exactly does that mean?
So that's something that I recently learned more about myself. As I mentioned, Wells Fargo is funding a pilot program at 3 Rebuilding Together affiliates, one in Philadelphia, one in I'm going to say Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and then here in Kent County. And the objective is to clear 10 titles. And a tangled title can happen, for example, when someone passes away and the estate paperwork isn't handled. So the heirs are living. They're also called heirs' properties. That might be a more familiar name to your listeners. But there are folks living in the house. They're paying the property taxes. They're carrying the homeowner's insurance. But if they were to go to, for example, try to get a home equity loan or to sell the house, their name's not on the title. And therefore, they don't legally own the house. And therefore, they're not able to do those things. So we are partnering with Shore Legal Access, which was formerly Midshore Pro Bono. And we're using this grant money to pay the legal fees for these qualifying individuals who need their paperwork filed. So we can't handle anything really messy. You know, if there's a conflict between siblings, I'm afraid that's not a good fit for our program. But if it's a generation back and it's a matter of recording the deed and opening an estate, that could be a really good fit. So we would encourage you to reach out to us, and then we'll put you in touch with Shore Legal. And ideally, you'd also need some home repairs that we could help you with once your name's on the title, because I can't do, my grants are restricted for owner-occupied home repairs. So if your name's not on the deed, unfortunately, I would have to pass on your project.
That's how you become involved.
That's how I become involved, because it's keeping me from being able to offer our services.
Oh, I understand now. Yeah, it's interesting, because if you live in an area where people are in constant turnover mode, the titles usually are updated every time the house turns over. But we are in an area where generation after generation may stay in the same homestead. And if one generation passes away and leaves the house to the next generation, they may not realize that they need to process the will and go through the steps to upgrade the title of the home. They may just think, well, I've lived here my whole life. I'll just continue to live here.
My granddaddy built this house.
And I'll just stay here, not realizing that their name is not on the title, and they technically don't own the house. And even though nobody's going to come and throw them out, because the house has probably been long paid for, as you said, if you need services or you need assistance or need anything, really, and you can't produce the title, you're
stuck.
You're stuck, yeah. Oh, that's interesting. All right, so that sounds like a great program, too.
So and I am seeking applicants, so please do reach out.
All right, so these are types of people that volunteers can do this type of work pretty simply. So if you're not able to swing hammers and tools and stuff, this is how volunteers can help you.
Volunteers can help administer the survey. They, as I mentioned, there's these ambassadorship opportunities where you're making presentations to different groups or tabling at community events. The other thing they can do is get the word out to contractors. Right now, I am at the beginning of my funding cycle, and I have some money to spend on contractors. It is hard to find them around here. We have a lot of great contractors that are employed by folks who are doing larger projects than what I'm doing. So I know sometimes it can feel maybe not worth it to bid our jobs, but it is worth it. You are changing the life of someone's grandmother, someone's auntie, someone's uncle who may be a disabled veteran. So if you can bid out a couple of our jobs, we're not asking you to do it for free. I do have money to pay contractors, and in particular general contractors. I'm asked to do, with the aging population we have here, I'm asked to convert a lot of bathtubs into low threshold showers so people can bathe safely. If that's something that's in your wheelhouse, please do reach out to us. I would love to get you in our contractor roster. And
a lot of the work that you have to do has to be contracted out. I would imagine that if you're looking for some very technical type aspects of work that needs to be done, it needs to be contracted.
Yes.
So the volunteers, what would the volunteers do? Would they do, like, repairs?
Well, a great example of what volunteers can do is a really successful program that we launched last year with a grant from the Kent County Health Department. It's called our Lifetime Loaned Ramp Program. So for many, many years, we constructed stick-built wheelchair ramps when people's mobility needs changed. But there's a lot of maintenance required with a stick-built construction. There's permitting required because it's a permanent change to the house rather than a temporary change. You know, then you have to possibly get rid of it if it's no longer needed, and that can be cumbersome. So with this grant last year, we it was a health disparities grant, we launched this Lifetime Loaned Aluminum Ramp Program. So we are retaining ownership of the ramps that we install in people's homes, and when they no longer need them, we can take them back, we can clean them up, and we can use them elsewhere. And I think we are, have done at least 7 of those ramps since the launch of the program. So I'm really excited about that. And our volunteers install them. And it takes about 2.5 or 3 hours.
Okay. And obviously you have a couple of people that have some experience doing that that can help.
Yeah, we've got a great team.
Be installed properly.
And then we'll also repair decks. We'll clean out gutters. We will, if you want to go through the training, you can properly install grab bars. If there's not a contractor doing a lot of work on the bathroom, then we'll send in a team to do grab bars. So there's a variety of things, but we do contract out electrical, plumbing, roofs. I won't put a volunteer on the
that
roof.
That makes sense. Well, those are all licensed types of functions anyway, licensed skills. All right, we're going to need to take another break. You're listening to My Generation on 106.9 WCTR. We'll be right back.
At Compass Regional Hospice, we understand that a serious illness diagnosis affects all aspects of life for both the patient and the caregiver. Our
isn't the most alluring aspect of your retirement lifestyle. It's the security you get with Axe Life Care. Having the retirement you always planned for. Take off for new adventures, meet fascinating residents, and find out how much easier, more enjoyable, and more secure life can be. Your long-term care is prearranged and guaranteed. Your nest egg is protected. Discover retirement living at Heron Point. Call us to learn more, 877-380-1360, or visit axeheronpoint.org.
Generation on 106.9 WCTR. I'm your host, Larry Vetter. My guest this morning is Genevieve Croker, Executive Director of Rebuilding Together Kent County. Genevieve, I've learned a lot already this morning. And there's a couple of things. I know before we were talking about the programs that you had, the special programs you had going on, and we talked about your need for contractors.
Yes.
fully understand where that's all coming from. You're dealing with some difficult situations sometimes. But I wanted to, before we finish up this program, I wanted to talk to you about how do people apply? First of all, suppose I am a homeowner living in tough situations. I could possibly be disabled, can't get around, can't do my own repairs, maybe very, very low income, trying to live just on a low Social Security and nothing much else. I still have to eat, still have to do everything else in my life. How do people find, first of all, how do people find out about you? And how do they apply for help? And what kind of help can they apply for?
Sure. So people find out about us in all kinds of different ways. A lot of it's word of mouth, or if, you know, we're working on one home and they'll see our sign out and come over and chat about what we're up to. There are very few criteria. You must simply own your home, reside in it, and meet the income criteria. Now, those income criteria are set by the federal government each year, so they do change in about April or May, weirdly, of each year. But more or less right now, the majority of our funds are reserved for those folks that are living on an income of about $45,000 or less. That's for the household. But you can always find the updated income criteria on our website. So our website is rebuildingtogetherkcmd.org. And there's an apply tab where you can see the HUD income limits listed. You can download a PDF of the application, print it, and fill it out. You can fill it out directly online. Or the most common way that we get applications, because again, rural broadband is an issue here,
right,
is paper applications. So you can call us at 410-778-4544 to request that we mail you a paper application. You can stop by our office and we'll be happy to give you an application. You can email us. There's any number of ways. Social services has access to the application. The folks at the health department know about it. So please do call. If you think you're eligible for the services, we would love to put you through the process and see if there's anything we can do. Now, in terms of the types of repairs we do, as I mentioned, we do try to focus on the most critical. We're not here to remodel your bathroom or remodel your kitchen.
I ask you for a sunroom with a hot tub in it,
I'm going to have to decline that repair, unfortunately. But if you have a leak in your roof, if you have a soft spot in your floor, if you are having changing mobility needs and you need grab bars or handrails installed to help you get around the house, let's say your kitchen range hood, the fan isn't working properly anymore, you know, that can be a real safety hazard. We'd love to replace that for you. So basically, when we ask you to fill out the application, we tell you, put it all down, we'll take a look, and we'll work with you to try to prioritize what we have the budget to do. And as I mentioned, it's that $5,000 number is an average. So I'm able to spend up to $15,000 per home for the terms of my grant. Now, I can't do that on everyone.
Right.
But there are some folks that really only need $1,000 or $2,000 worth of repairs. So that leaves a little extra for some folks that need some more help. And as you mentioned, yeah, a lot of the folks we help are just living on a Social Security check. They've got medicine to buy. They've got gas to put in their car. Mm-hmm. And there's just not enough to go around. But we also help younger families with children that are struggling to make ends meet. So it's worth a phone call if you think you might be eligible. We can talk about it.
Okay. So you're not restricted to just interior or exteriors. You do both.
That's correct.
What about yards themselves? Like if it's a hazard, if somebody's got a lot of debris in their yard and they can't even walk around properly, do you clean that out too, or that's not under your purview?
We could do something like that. So particularly in April during National Rebuilding Month, we try to bring together a larger group of volunteers and really hit a number of the things going on in the house. So in that circumstance, yes, we might be trimming the hedges around an outdoor HVAC unit. We might be getting huge pieces of debris out the yard so people can get through it safely or mow safely. It really depends on the house. We understand that the way you feel about the place you live is also critical to your emotional well-being. So we would consider all kinds of things to be critical safety repairs, but it is a matter of the number of resources we can bring to bear. So a lot depends on the time of year that you're applying and also the kinds of volunteers that we have signing up to do projects.
Yeah, so I guess it's very site specific. It could be.
It's site specific. It really, yeah. It really is. I mean, we treat everyone equitably, but we do have funding constraints and time constraints, so it is a lot of doing a jigsaw puzzle, trying to accomplish as much as possible with the resources we have.
All right. We're slowly but surely getting towards the end of the program, but we do have a little bit more time left. So I was wondering, I always like to kind of come to the end of the program with some positive news and some feel-good stories. So are there any good positive stories that you can tell us?
Oh, well, I mean, I think a lot of the work, all the work we do is positive. It keeps people more safely in their homes. It allows them to, in some cases, I had a woman who's a widow, and she hadn't been able to bathe in over a year. She was taking bird baths in the powder room downstairs. Mm-hmm. And with not too much money, but a whole lot of love, we were able to make it safe for her to take a shower again. And you know how it feels when you get out of the shower. You feel like a whole new person.
Yeah.
So it's things like that. Or as I mentioned, these ramps, you know, folks that haven't come out of their house for a long time because they don't have a safe way to do it. I had a woman who lived out in the country, and she couldn't go to get her mail until her grandson came to visit because she couldn't safely get out of her house without help. And now after we put the ramp in, she put Christmas lights all over it. She told all her neighbors about it. It's like her favorite part of the house. We got a little landing. She can sit out there. So I think it's important to keep joy in our work as we move forward, because boy, some days are harder than others, but it really does make a difference.
Well, I can imagine that. I mean, obviously everybody works to try and better their lives with more money, mm-hmm. but it's also pretty nice when you see a smile on somebody's face, or somebody now is able to take pride in the place that they live again.
It's priceless.
Because I understand, and I'm the same way, that you know, the house is a place that you spend most of your time.
It's your sanctuary.
And it's your sanctuary, right? It's a place that you want to be able to go to at the end of your day, whether you work or whether you don't work, it doesn't matter. It's a place that you go that you want to feel comfortable in and to be able to do things. And the simple repairs, as you mentioned, the woman who's now able to take a shower again. Oh, I can only imagine what relief she must have felt. Whew. Being able to do something like that. So that's really good. And then I do know, it's interesting, I was going to ask you about the future of the organization, but you said something earlier that sort of resonates with me when you said that really you're working really hard to put yourself out of business. And it's an interesting way of putting it, but it's very true. You're trying to get it to the point where your organization is not necessary anymore around here. And that probably is the ideal situation, that if all of a sudden it comes to the point,
if everyone had a safe place to live, I would feel great about that.
Yeah, you never have to worry about that. Yeah, so I was going to ask you a quick question, and I hope this doesn't turn us into a negative area, but I was wondering, does the local government, does the Kent County government or any of the township governments, are they able to assist you in any of this, or are their hands sort of tied and they can't really help?
Well, we are the grateful recipient of a $50,000 ARPA grant from the town of Chestertown, the American Rescue Plan Act money that they got. So that's awesome. Those funds are restricted to within the town limits of Chestertown. So if you're in the town limits and listening to this message, please get in contact. I neglected to mention, this year for the first time, we also got a Rural Maryland Council grant together with Rebuilding Together Queen Anne's County. So that has to hit multi-county jurisdictions. So we're partnering with our sister affiliate. Hopefully we may do a joint project in the Chestertown area code across the river in Queen Anne's County. We're looking for that project right now. There are funds that many Rebuilding Together affiliates are able to access called CDBG funds, Community Development Block Grant funds. Our county is unable to access or does not currently access those funds. I believe it's a staffing issue at the county level, but you know, we are a pretty small county. I know they're stretched very thin. Yeah. They haven't been able to allocate funds in their budget to us beyond what the health department has been so generous to do. Jamie Williams in Economic Development is the one that put me in touch with Upper Shore Regional Council for the housing survey. So I think that they're doing what they can, but it would be great if the county had a housing position.
Yeah, no, I understand that they are stretched as well, too, and they're dealing with the same kind of budgetary constraints that everybody else is dealing with in this community. And so I get that something, they may have all the best intentions in the world, but they just simply can't do that sort of thing. So it is very difficult. Well, Genevieve, I want to thank you for the things that you do. I think that your organization sounds wonderful. I was not that familiar with it before. Between speaking to you now and reading up a little bit about your organization prior to this conversation, I'm suitably impressed by the things that you do. And,
thank you so much.
And I think it's really great, and I think it's wonderful. And you must have a big heart, even if you're working for a living. I mean, there's got to be
My parents raised me right.
Apparently,
shout out to Mom and Dad.
Right, but anyway, thanks so much for being my guest this morning.
Thank you.
I'd also like to thank my sponsors, Heron Point, Chester River Pharmacy, Compass Regional Hospice, and Prince Limousine. This is 106.9 WCTR, and if it's Sunday morning, you've been listening to My Generation.